Support for the Radio West podcast comes from Harmon's Grocery, committed to excellent service and friendly smiles. Your food is our passion.
There is a lot to be sorted through in the story playing out in Box Elder County about this massive data center complex known as Stratos. As you've heard, developers have purchased roughly 40,000 acres north of Brigham City, land they're devoting to this project that could eventually require more electricity than the entire state of Utah runs on today. And so there are a lot of threads to explore. There's water and its effect on the Great Salt Lake, of course. There's natural gas generation and emissions. There's heat. And, of course, what happens when rural landscapes are transformed into these industrial computing zones? Also, who benefits? Who bears the costs? But we are going to begin our conversation by zooming out a bit. Earlier this week, we spoke with the journalist Mateo Wong. He has a new article in The Atlantic about what happens when artificial intelligence collides with the physical limits of the real world. Wong's story examines how generative AI is no longer just software. It's becoming this enormous industrial system. So AI feels weightless and virtual to a lot of us, but the infrastructure behind it is intensely physical, and it's extraordinarily energy hungry. And that's part of what makes the story in Box Elder County so compelling. It's a case study in this new physical reality of AI, where a rural county is now confronting planetary scale computing demands. And underneath it all is a larger question: just how much of the physical world are we willing to consume in order to build artificial intelligence? Mateo Wong's article is called Inside the Dirty Dystopian World of AI Data Centers.
I had traveled to Memphis sort of late summer in order to do some reporting on a somewhat notorious project that Elon Musk was building called the Colossus Data Center. I wanted to meet a local environmental activist, Kishan Pearson, who had lived near this data center, which is in southwest Memphis. I met Kishan at a state park nearby. It was hot, but not terribly hot by Memphis standards. Nice day. The park is pretty. It's sunny. You can hear the birds. We get in the car and we start driving because the data center is, you know, 5 minute drive away. I'm rolling up the window because I don't want outside sound as I'm recording. And he's like, no, you need to keep the window down. You need to see how the air is going to change. We leave the park and we get onto this big road where every other vehicle there is a truck. And immediately, it's hazy. We're driving into a zone that is an industrial park, basically. There's an abandoned coal plant to one side of us, an active, very large natural gas plant to the other. You have a steel mill, a wastewater treatment facility. The smell of the air has changed. In the park, it smells like trees. It's very pleasant. Now it smells like asphalt. It smells like soot. And then Kishan points out the data center. This gigantic hangar set back behind a security fence. It's something like 700,000 square feet, roughly the size of 13 football fields. The building itself used to be an oven manufacturing facility. And that's Elon Musk's Colossus data center, right there before us, surrounded by cranes, trucks, cars, electrical equipment, and natural gas turbines. We think about AI and sort of the cloud more broadly as something that technology is served from, that our data lives in, but it's material and it's industrial, with heavy industry very frequently. Those facilities are placed in communities that don't have a huge say in their construction and how it's going to affect the area around them. This part of southwest Memphis, near a neighborhood called Boxtown. It's called Boxtown because formerly enslaved people built houses there out of abandoned train boxcars. It's an almost entirely black neighborhood, and they didn't have any say in whether Colossus was going to get built there. the project that's going to be built in Buckletter County is many, many, many times bigger than Colossus. Colossus uses roughly 300 megawatts of power at its maximum, which is something like conservatively 200,000 American homes. The final plan for the data center being built in Buckletter County is 9 gigawatts. That's almost as much as New York City uses on the hottest summer day when everybody is blasting air conditioning. It feels like the data center visited in Southwest Memphis is a honestly very small preview of what's to come in Utah and across the country, potentially.
Mateo Wong, hi, it's Doug Fabrizio here.
Hi, Doug. Thanks so much for having me.
I think maybe where we could begin is by having you kind of project the consumption that you lay out out in the future. So there's this level of consumption going on. The Colossus needs about, you know, as much electricity as 200,000 American homes. So in a decade, we're talking 40 Seattles, maybe more than 60 in half of that time. And this was so kind of breathtaking. One analyst told you by 2030, U.S. data centers are going to consume more electricity than all of the country's heavy industries. So we're talking cement, we're talking steel and cars and all the other industrial facilities together. So would you just sort of start there, if you would, just the project out what we're talking about in terms of in an industrial transformation for American or world society?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the power or electricity consumption of the internet and data centers has, like the electricity consumption of the rest of the United States, not grown all that much until recently. Nationwide, basically, electricity consumption has been stagnant for 20 years as a result of just like efficiency improvements and other things. And so now we're building all of these data centers to train and serve AI models everywhere. And that is accompanying a broader push towards electric vehicles, heat pumps, and electric heating and cooling, and also trying to electrify some like manufacturing facilities, say like a steel mill or whatever it may be. And so all of that together is a big push on U.S. electricity demand, of which data center is the biggest factor right now. And it's something that the nation hasn't had to deal with in a couple of decades. And you know, how do you meet that demand? It doesn't sound like a lot. It's something like a roughly 2% increase every year, at least. 2% doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're talking about the entire United States, 2% of its electricity consumption is a lot. And the way that energy companies and electrical utilities are going to meet that demand is to do what they've always done. And I talk to energy systems experts and also to grid operators directly. And they all said the same thing. It's the natural gas is the thing to beat in cost to some extent. And this was before the war in Iran. And also in terms of what they trust, if for the past 20, 30, 40 years, you have a new big customer coming onto your grid and you need to meet, you need to power them, what have you done? You built a natural gas plant. And if your utility, your number one priority is to keep the lights on. It's reliability. And what do you know? You know natural gas. What do you not know? You don't know if you're going to be able to figure out a sort of solar power plus battery system that's going to be able to run year round, you know, even at night and whatever it may be. And so a lot of this demand is being met by natural gas, which includes this enormous data center project in Utah. And that means carbon emissions, which affect the whole planet. And that means smog, which worsens the local air quality. And there are ways to reduce all of those things, of course, depending on how the turbines are set up and sort of smog capturing, reducing technologies and so on. But fundamentally, it means pollution of that sort. On top of that, the natural gas turbines need water to run, separate from the water used to cool the data center.
Yeah.
And on top of that, the data centers all typically have backup generators, diesel generators that power them. At some point, especially data centers that are connected to local grids. So I think this may not be the case for the one in Utah, but when a data center is drawing from the local grid, they need a backup source just in case of emergency. And these are usually small diesel generators. You'll see them outside the back of the data center. There'll be a row of towers. There are various designs that different companies use. But even if those never get used, even if there's never like a brownout or some reason that you have to use your backup source as a data center operator, mm-hmm. you have to turn those on and off something like 20, 25 times a year in order to test them, to make sure they work for regulatory reasons. Every time that happens, that produces smog. There are parts of the country where data centers are next to schools, parks, retirement homes, mm-hmm. hospitals. And you can't do anything about that by law. The diesel generator has to be turned on and off for a few hours, some number of times a year. And that's like probably a smaller impact, like in total compared to rows and rows of natural gas turbines being used to power Colossus or anywhere else. But there are just many layers to the ways in which this is kind of a real major industrial build out and not just like a new piece of software on your laptop.
Well, I guess that's the thing, maybe the kind of weird irony that we're talking about powering this hyper futuristic technology with the OG of power, fossil fuels, basically, that have basic emissions that cause, you know, pollution and raise questions about health and all the other and warm a planet, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's sort of a tremendous irony here. You know, that Elon Musk talks about using AI to help us become a, you know, interplanetary space conquering civilization. Yeah. And the way to train those AI models is to burn gas next to communities that have suffered from that same sort of pollution for decades. And there's a lot of irony there. There's, of course, a more hopeful vision. There's sure. There's a world in which, and what tech companies, data center companies will say, is that they're purchasing and investing in clean power for all of these projects. But it's kind of like a natural gas right now, clean power later situation.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly the case for Utah, and we'll come back to this in a moment. But the governor has in mind nuclear power for Utah's data centers. But hold off on that for a minute. Help us understand why AI models require so much energy in the first place. Because in your piece, mm-hmm. you write about how there's been this shift in how these systems are developed, that companies are making them, I think this is how you put it, smarter, not necessarily by improving the code, but they just make them bigger, which pushes more data through more powerful chips. So explain what you mean by that. What's changed in how these models are built?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. In the sort of big insider breakthrough of the generative AI boom as it exists today is not that someone cracked the code to replicating the human brain on a hard drive.
Yeah.
It's that they figured out that you could consistently improve the capabilities of a neural network, in this case, a large language model, which is trained to predict words in a sequence by giving it more data and training it for longer and with more computing resources, all of which means more electricity.
Yeah.
And you've, on top of that, have another change that's happened in the past year or two, where an additional way the models perform better is by having them work for longer on harder problems. So akin to how, I don't know, in school you would have taken longer to solve a really hard math problem instead of something really easy. Kind of they do something similar with the AI models. And that also means that it's not just in the training, but also at runtime when they're in use, they're starting to use more and more electricity. And so the way Sam Altman and other tech executives put it is that they're like electron constraint, that they need more of all sorts of resources and electrons. This kind of their Silicon Valley way of putting that they need more electricity.
You mentioned that like since the launch of ChatGPT, companies like Amazon and Microsoft and Meta and Google, they've spent more than $600 billion on infrastructure. Mm. Put that number in perspective.
Yeah. it's a huge number, and also they're going to dwarf it in 2026. So from the launch of ChatGPT to the end of 2025, basically, these companies spent over $600 billion. This is more than adjusted for inflation it cost to build the entire interstate highway system in the United States.
Wow.
And that took several decades.
Yeah.
And it was like the defining mode of transportation in the U.S. for both people and businesses and freight. You know, that much has been spent already on AI. They're anticipating spending. This number changes because their spending forecasts keep increasing. But in 2026, more than that in 1 year.
More than 600 bill.
Yeah, so like it was at some point 700 billion. It may be higher now.
Wow.
In a year. And, it, you know, 2027 will probably be similar. They say at some point it'll level off, that they'll have done everything they need. But it's a huge amount of spending. Yeah, it's one of the most, if not the most expensive infrastructure project like ever in U.S. history, certainly in recent U.S. history.
You write that a data center is this is how you put it in your piece, a planet of contradictions. You write about heat without motion, shelter without bodies, light without sky. Explain what you mean by this.
Yeah. So for this story, I was able to visit some data centers run by the company Equinix, which is a major data center provider in Northern Virginia, which is one of the biggest hubs for data centers in the world. Inside a data center, I was almost thinking about it as there's a kind of not literal life. I don't mean to imply that AI models are sentient or conscious in any way.
Yeah.
But if we sort of use the language of Silicon Valley, this is like the habitat for AI agents and chatbots. And so you have shelter without bodies. You have these giant refrigerator-sized racks of computer chips and servers. You have heat because those chips run hot. And some of them, the AI chips in particular, you walk by them and you can feel the heat. Like I broke a sweat at some point.
Huh.
But there's not a lot of light. It's very dark because they wanted light produces heat and requires electricity. And they're trying to keep it as cool as possible. And so the data center is very dark, and they're just motion-activated lights that turn on as you walk by, or, you know, for human staff that are going in to do repairs or install new equipment or whatever it may be. There's wind in some of them because some use industrial fans for cooling. In one of the older data centers I walked through, I could feel a breeze on my cheek. I mean, it's really loud. Like, you know, as a reporter, I was recording my interviews as we walked around.
Yeah.
And I was listening back to it, and like the sort of automatic transcription of anything that happened on the data center floor that I'd use was really bad. You know, I had to like reference my notebook and then listen to it at like very high volume myself and like find the quotes because it's so loud. It's just humming and humming. And so it really like is just gives the impression of being in another world. There are no windows.
Yeah.
Speaking of no light, because for security reasons, but also for keeping out the heat reasons.
So the first data centers that were built, you mentioned, you know, so the basic purpose hasn't really changed. I mean, they're about, so you pack computer equipment close together. The idea is so information can be stored and just so you can transmit it efficiently. But you also make the point that the thing that's changing, of course, is the scale, obviously. So what does that mean in terms of the heat output and how that's changing? Because you say computer chips are hungrier now, so they basically just run much hotter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the most advanced chips used to train AI models and also to run them on the web, because these computer programs are large, because as we mentioned, training them has required more and more and more electricity over time. These chips do a lot more computations per second, and they require more energy and they exude more heat. One of these racks or cabinets full of chips, I was told at the Equinix data center, the traditional one versus the AI one, the AI one can use 60 times more electricity. And so it's hot, and also that means cooling it is harder, and you have to devise new cooling technologies so that the industrial fans don't cut it anymore. We can get into sort of what it means for the water consumption and water footprint of these data centers. It's very complicated.
Yeah.
Because sort of one of the emerging ways of cooling these very hot AI chips, which I think seems to be based off of press releases, what's going to be happening in Utah, is that they run water directly over the chip, or there's a metal plate that sits on top of the AI chip.
Right.
And when I say AI computer chip, it's like very big. It's not like a tiny little thing in your phone. And the water goes through the metal plate, and the metal plate picks up the heat, and the water gets hot. And then they cool the water down in like a chiller, kind of the same way like the air conditioning in your car uses electricity to cool it down. And so in theory, that uses less water because you are circulating the water again and again.
It's a closed loop, as they say.
It's closed loop. But the trade-off there is that you need way more electricity to do that. It significantly increases the power demand from one of these data centers. And if that electricity is coming from natural gas turbines, the electricity has a water footprint too. And so there's like a fine balance. And there are other cooling technologies that can reduce potentially both the water footprint and the electricity footprint. There are like smarter ways to design a data center, but maybe they take longer. They're not as fast. They're not as cheap. And maybe they're not as proven at scale. And so they're not being used super widely. But it is like requiring AI and data center companies to sort of figure out new cooling solutions for sure, because the facilities run so hot to meet the demands of AI.
I think one of the questions that is coming up here in Utah about this Box Elder facility is that question of heat. And I'll come back to water in a second, but what does it mean if for the heat? Does the heat escape into the atmosphere? Because one of the stories that this has been circulating is this question of whether or not this massive data center is going to create what some people are describing as this heat bubble over the complex. Mm. And you know, that has implications for the environment. I mean, it has implications for all kinds of things, creating its own kind of atmospheric conditions or whatever, and especially in a place like Utah, which is hot already at times. And so what do you know about that part of the heat story?
Yeah, there's been some research recently showing that data centers create heat islands around them and sort of raise the temperature of the air nearby. And I think that it's going to vary on a case-by-case basis, of course. I think something that's tricky when talking about data centers is like the physical location and climate of where any facility is placed could make it very different from another one. But like, yeah, I mean, the heat has to go somewhere. In a traditional data center, you evaporate the heat through water. And so that's where the water consumption comes from. But you're also like putting heat into the surrounding area for sure. You know, like the back end of an air, I don't know. Actually, I grew up in New York City, and we had window air conditioning units. Right. Back end of a window AC unit is hot.
Yeah,
you know, even though it's blowing cool air, and the heat's got to go somewhere.
Hmm. It sort of leads to this question of skepticism of things like that, because the governor Cox, has said in response to the protests about all of this that a lot of people are operating with what he described as just bad information or outdated information. And he says a lot of the stuff that critics are using when they're talking about, you know, water for the lake or heat, you know, he mentioned this heat bubble or this heat dome over the site. He said that information hasn't checked out yet, or described it as kind of deeply flawed. And he says now people just believe this. So I guess the question is, how much of the information that we're getting about all of this is settled, or is it still up in the air about the potential for a heat bubble or any of these sorts of things? Who can claim that this is settled, I guess, is the question.
I would say that it's not settled, and the sort of like heat island, heat bubble effect that is troubling. Surely other people should study it as well. But I would say the burden of proof is not on the critics of the data centers. The reason this stuff isn't settled is because data center companies don't provide any very, very small amounts of data to the public on how much electricity they use, on how much electricity they ask for. Like, the only reason I was able to do some of this reporting in Memphis and get some real numbers on Colossus is because we filed public records requests in Tennessee and got that information. Otherwise, we wouldn't know. The only information you know, people get is when they ask county officials in public meetings that are then like recorded on YouTube or reported in local news. And even then, like those local officials probably don't know or maybe under NDA when it comes to sharing real numbers about electricity use, about water consumption, about the heat nearby, about the nitrous oxides released by the natural gas turbines on site used to power the data center. Like that data is just not readily available at scale across the nation at facilities small and large. And so, yeah, a lot of it is unsettled. But the reason it's unsettled is because it's so opaque. It's not the fault of people living in Utah or Memphis or anywhere else. It's not the fault of the people asking questions. Those questions should be answered.
What can you say? You didn't look at Utah as in this particular context necessarily, but I wonder, one of the things that is worrying people most about this facility is its impact on the Great Salt Lake, or at least largely the question of how much water, consuming so much water to disperse that intense amount of heat. You mentioned this sort of closed loop system. So it sounds sustainable. It sounds like, oh, there's a finite amount of water, but how complicated, is it more complicated than that, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it is more complicated than that. The closed loop system is similar to what I was describing before, where you have like the cold plate on top of the AI chips, you run water through it and you cool the water down in like a chiller with electricity, and the water can be recycled. It can be treated and I think they mentioned, you know, fed back into the lake.
Yeah.
But it is more complicated than that, even though that sounds good in theory and maybe the best solution for, you know, a drought stricken area. But there are complicated factors. I mean, one, heat has to go somewhere. So if you're not dispersing it in the water, because you can't put really hot water. I mean, we're talking water that can be like 50, 60 degrees Celsius, like well over 100 Fahrenheit. You know, you can't put that in the lake. So that has to get dispersed into the air, which creates questions about the heat bubble that we were just discussing. But also, I mentioned this briefly before, if you are not going to use evaporative cooling of any sort, or something else called adiabatic cooling, which is a fancy word for like they spray water inside the data center into the air. And when you have more humid air, it can contain more heat. And so it reduces the cooling demand. And this is actually like one of the more eco-friendly ways that to cool a data center if you can stomach using a little bit of water, because obviously you lose a little bit of water by spraying it into the air like that. But if you're just using this closed-loop system, you need electricity to cool the water down. And if that electricity is coming from natural gas turbines, and it sounds like for a while it's going to be all natural gas turbines that they're going to build, those use water. Those have a water footprint. And so it depends on the design and setup of those turbines. It goes back to this point I made before that it's a little information to share that it's hard to say whether that's, you know, net more or less water being used in the data center. Which is to say, like, I don't know the specifics, and if they're not going to share the specifics, it's hard to tell. It sounds good in theory, the closed loop system, and it's something a lot of data center providers are doing. It's something OpenAI is doing in Texas, but without more information about the overall system, it is hard to say.
It seems like when you're talking about alternative forms of energy and looking for different ways of cooling these systems, that's going to require, and this gets to kind of a big theme in your piece, a kind of patience. And it doesn't seem like with the incentives that are baked in here that there's much patience at all, that this technology is on the move and people are responding to it now. And it gets to a big question here also that a lot of critics of the facility are saying, and that is, like, what is the rush? One of the things the governor mentioned, it's sort of, he makes this kind of abundance-like appeal. You know, he said that he's sick and tired of the country not building things. He says that this is how he put it. He said, I'm so tired of our country taking years to get stuff done. It's the dumbest thing ever. So how do you respond to that? that sense of urgency, because that seems to be one of the core issues here.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and yeah, it's hard to build stuff in America. I think like the places we see that are like in housing,
yeah,
and in like transmission lines, which is relevant to data centers, but also like grid reliability more broadly. Sure. But the case from the AI industry for why one should go quickly would be a combination of a few things. One would be financial. These companies, as we discussed before, are spending truly gobsmacking amounts of money. Mm. And they need a return sooner rather than later because their free cash flow, their balance sheets are starting to look shaky. They're taking on debt. Investors are going to ask more and more questions every quarter. Mm. And there is demand. Anthropic, one of the leading AI companies, has had to limit how much people can use its chatbots because they don't have enough data center capacity. A, that's like a sign that, you know, they want to serve more people and generate more revenue. Okay. And that seems like that's a purely economic motivation and, you know, is prioritizing investors. Some could argue prioritizing consumers and that's like not good. I don't know. There's also an argument that sort of this technology is wondrous. It's going to figure out new solutions to fixing the climate and otherwise. And so we should just power forward to building sort of these like super intelligent machines. Which is something I think a lot of people believe, like genuinely. I don't think that's said in bad faith in Silicon Valley. And my answer to that would be like, we knew how to fix the climate crisis and transition to fully like renewables a long time ago. And we just haven't done it. And so like that's like why they want to go fast. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could go slower. There are like, I mentioned that America's electricity consumption has not grown in a couple of decades. It will be growing now with or without AI because of electric vehicles and the electrification of all parts of the economy.
Yeah.
And part of the motivation for that is because once something is powered by electricity instead of directly by gas or oil, you can generate that electricity via renewable or carbon-free sources. But building those takes time, especially when at scale they're less proven or some of the technologies are still being developed. And so, you know, like solar panels, wind turbines, setting aside the like pressure on those industries being placed or coming from the White House right now, right, making it harder. They're like, those are booming industries. And if, as people figure out sort of utility scale battery and storage solutions, you can use those to power not just data centers, but like your home, your office, and other things. And then nuclear power has become a really big focus for the AI industry and the country more broadly. It's sort of it's in the early stages of a renaissance after many decades of the U.S. being really scared of building new nuclear capacity. And I think that's great. And that's going to take time. And like another way to put the 9 gigawatts figure, which is the final goal for this major data center in Utah, is that 9 gigawatts is like 9 large nuclear reactors.
Wow.
And it'll take a long time to build that, frankly, right?
Well, we should say the governor is, that's what he's thinking, or at least that's what he's talking about. I mean, he says
great. But like elected officials, tech companies are saying this, and they're spending a lot of money on nuclear power. I visited the Three Mile Island plant, which is being restarted. And it's being restarted because Microsoft is buying the power in part to offset the consumption of data centers of its own.
Yeah.
Great. But at the same time, you're building new natural gas facilities in the present, and you're extending the life of coal plants. Mm. I mean, the planet is not doing well already, right? And also, like, potentially the health of the people who are living near those facilities and the children being born near those facilities. Like, that stuff's not reversible. And I also find it hard to imagine that those get turned off, those natural gas plants, right? It's like we have natural gas plus nuclear. Cool. We should be having nuclear in order to take off natural gas from the grid. That's what should be happening.
I want to mention something you write about in your piece, which gets us to the idea of what it's like to, as you say, live near one of these data centers. You mentioned in your reporting sort of descriptions of this constant industrial noise. It's something kind of sensory, and there's a woman that you talk to in Memphis, a woman named Sarah Gladney, who told you, she said, when the wind comes up early in the morning, I can smell it. She's talking about, of course, the natural gas turbines that power these facilities. So just help us understand what these turbines mean in that sense in practice.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it means exactly that these turbines are major emitters of nitrous oxide and others, such as smog, forming pollutants. And so when you live near them, in Boxtown, it's just a couple miles away from Colossus, when the wind blows, you can smell it. I was fortunate enough that we couldn't smell it when we were, you know, near her, by her house, talking to her, to Miss Gladney. And I think even when I was near Colossus, it's really hard to tell apart. Is that smell coming from the data center? Is that smell coming from the steel mill? Is that smell coming from the truck next to me? I don't know.
Yeah.
Which is almost like the point. But it can be hard living near one similarly, like they're loud. I think that's a common complaint, especially in parts of Virginia where you have residential areas where data centers are built nearby. It's hard to know what these sort of heat effects are going to be like, as we discussed before. But there's like a real material shift in the environment. It's almost like a form of terraforming. I describe it as at one point of the piece, except not terraforming for human life.
Yeah. What do you think, Mateo, about how this is going to potentially reshape the, you know, physical and economic landscape of communities around the U.S. I think one of the things that is being proposed in Box Elder County, I mean, it's, you know, people are talking about it as just this data center project, but apparently the vision is bigger than that. Backers are talking about it as this full-scale development. I mean, they're talking about not just the data centers and power generation, but they're talking about housing, they're talking about manufacturing, which means like, I think that it means like hotels and restaurants. It's like this entire economic ecosystem around there where you have workers and suppliers and all these businesses. So what do you think about that? Is this going to create a new kind of landscape in communities around the country?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's like an optimistic and a cynical interpretation of that. The optimistic one is like, yeah, it creates a new kind of landscape. And similar to sort of like office parks of the past.
Yeah.
You have a green space, you have places where people work, there are a lot of jobs. You have playgrounds, libraries that are built near these businesses, hotels, foot traffic. You have jobs for people that have to supply the data center, electricians, plumbers, and so on. And I imagine that's kind of the vision that's being proffered here. The more cynical take is I find it hard to imagine that a lot of these businesses are going to be close to the data centers for air quality reasons.
Yeah.
Meaning the natural gas turbines and the diesel backup generators.
But maybe even just the sound.
For the sound, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the heat, three. And for security reasons, four. You know, like you want some buffer. And so then what are we talking about? We're talking about these data centers create a lot of construction jobs in the short term and not a lot of jobs in the long term. It doesn't take that many people to staff a data center.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about for a large facility, like a few dozen people. For a 9-gigawatt data center, it's going to be probably in the low hundreds. Fine. That's not like, again, we're talking about as much electricity as New York City.
Yeah.
Right? A city of 8-9 million people. I don't know, 200-300 jobs, 500 jobs. That's optimistic. That would surprise me. That's not a lot. And so how do you tell people we're creating jobs and improving the... I don't want to assume bad intentions and bad faith from the developers, from Governor Cox and so on. To be clear, I don't know. I haven't reported directly on this. I'm just saying that it's hard for me to imagine like a serious office park built around a data center. But I can understand why trying to do that would be good, because it would allow you to say we're going to add a lot of jobs to this project, even though the data center by itself... Yes, lots of construction jobs, but once the construction is done, not a lot of permanent jobs.
Well, there's another image that you introduce in your piece, which I want to ask you about. You mentioned that no AI firm has yet presented a convincing business model, which means the possibility, as you say, of a generative AI boom that could prove to be a bubble. Mm-hmm. And so I want to ask about that. So what happens if it... And I have to say, it doesn't – I guess what happens if this revolution that we thought that this was isn't that? Though I have to say right now, it's hard to see that it won't transform everything because that's what everyone thinks is going to happen. But if it fails, you mentioned that you're left with what you call the ruins from a future that never came to pass. And what does that look like?
Yeah. So I agree. It's the case for AI being a bubble is going harder to make.
Yeah.
I think the amount that these companies are spending does mean it's possible that there's sort of some kind of short-term retraction, and finance being early is the same as being wrong. And justifying some of this investment in the next few years is going to be hard, I think, still. But maybe not. I don't know. A second point there is also that a lot of industrial build-outs of the past, railroads, fiber optic cables in the 2000s, a bunch of other things, canals, those are all bubbles. And they also transform the world.
Yeah.
But in the short term, the infrastructure build-out just required so much capital that it couldn't provide a short-term payout. So who knows? But surely a bubble case harder to make. Should that happen, should there be some kind of crash, we're going to have a lot of natural gas turbines all over the place, you know, and they're going to get used, and that's going to decrease the demand for clean power. If the vision right now is like we can make natural gas turbines and then we'll add the solar panels and the nuclear reactors and so on later on, that is contingent on there being demand for those. If the natural gas facility's up and running and there is natural gas and it's not absurdly expensive, it's going to be much harder to build out that clean power. And so, yeah, that's what happens. That's the worst case scenario.
Governor Cox says that we have to have these data centers in the country. This is an imperative. And so he says, we have to work this out, that growth of this kind is inevitable. The state should be in line, as everyone else is, to compete for it. But it sort of gets, I guess, finally to something you mentioned in your piece, that AI has pushed us toward this inflection point. That, as you say, we can either double down on the energy systems of the past or use this moment to move toward a carbon-free future. So I guess, finally, what do you think about that? Do you think the industry is, you know, capable of slowing down enough to make that transition? Or is speed going to dictate the outcome of all of this?
It's a great question. And, I mean, just the announcement that 9 gigawatts of power are going to be all supplied by natural gas to begin with is like a sign of speed and those fossil fuels being prioritized in a big way by the industry right now. But I'm like, I don't know if I'm an optimistic person by nature, but I have to hope here, because if otherwise it becomes like very dreary and sad. I have to hope that the huge amounts of money that these companies have and huge incentive they have to build new electricity sources can eventually push towards a shift to primarily clean energy for data centers and beyond. I mean, if you look globally, like the solar panels and wind turbines are competitive with natural gas price-wise, in some ways cheaper. And you have to hope the economics are going to rule the day at some point for these companies, as they typically do. Yeah, it's a challenge, especially when manufacturing solar panels and wind turbines is not something the United States has a lot of capacity to do compared to, say, China, which is, of course, also a country that we're racing in the AI space.
Mateo Wong, thank you very much.
Thank you for the great questions and conversation. I enjoyed this a lot.
Mateo Wong, he's a staff writer for The Atlantic. His article is in the April issue of the magazine. It's called Inside the Dirty Dystopian World of AI Data Centers. We'll have a link to it on our website, radiowest.org. Radio West is a production of KUER. It's produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. I'm Doug Fabrizio.